Do you feel like sometimes you might be in your own way when it comes to your dating life? And maybe you've just become so jaded and just hurt from the fucked up world that is dating? Well, if you do, I highly recommend Brené Brown's The Power of Vulnerability, which is a lecture series, fuck my life, which is a lecture series that you can get on Audible. To me, her research and vulnerability is so powerful, and it honestly helped me bring down a lot of my walls and barriers. So I suggest you check it out. It's a 6-part lecture series that you can get on Audible. If you use my promo code, you can try Audible for a month free. That's audibletrial.com/51stghosts. And make sure to check out the wide variety of the hundreds of unmatched titles that Audible has to offer. Hi, and welcome to 51st Ghosts. I think at this point, you know what the podcast is about, and if you don't, why are you starting off on this episode? Go back to the beginning. Anyway, I always forget to say this, but don't forget to like and rate and share the podcast if you actually like the podcast. It helps, you know, if you're not the only person listening to it. So today, I'm going to be talking about love at first sight. Sort of a controversial topic, really. Because a lot of people are adamantly, vehemently refuse to believe it, and then there are people who die by it. What I'm going to do is I'm going to tell a story like I do sometimes, and it's going to actually be about my love at first sight experience. And then I'm going to explore the science behind it and some of the reasons why people don't believe in it. But I think there's actually a little bit of science proving that this happened. I think the more frustrating thing about people refusing to believe in love at first sight, and I think one of the reasons why a lot of us are like, no, it does exist, is because when you're adamantly saying that love at first sight doesn't exist, you're invalidating someone's entire experience and what they went through. So if you want to be that asshole and do that, that's on you. Or you can kind of just be like, oh, okay, and then kind of walk away from a situation, because it is a really special thing that happened. I was in college, and funnily enough, in the spring quarter, so my last quarter of my third year of college, we talked about love at first sight in one of my drama theory classes called Transversal Poetics. And I was like, love at first sight does not exist. I 100% was like, it's not real. My teacher, who was male, and a few guys in the class, and this will be the fact I'm pointing out that they're all male or masculine figures is part of the science part later, were like, no, it does. And I was on the whole, no, it doesn't exist. Literally, the fall quarter of the next year, my last year of college, I experienced love at first sight. So that was ironic and funny, because I kept being like, I don't believe in this. This can't happen. You can't fall in love with someone at first sight, and yet it happened to me. I was taking a graduate level lighting design class, and graduate level courses are not meant to be taken with an undergraduate course load. I'm just saying. It sounds good, but it's so much work in one class that to take a graduate level class when you have to take a certain amount of units to be, you know, considered full-time or whatever is extremely difficult. So I was a zombie for the first several weeks, maybe almost month of my fall quarter. Now, for those of you not familiar with the quarter system, it's like 10 weeks. I was in a jazz dance class. I was in level 2. And I would just show up. You know, I was just literally trying to get through the day because I had so much shit going on. So I was already in class for a while. And there's this girl, I never really noticed her before, because I'm assuming it's because I was a zombie, as I keep mentioning, because I just want everyone to know how hard it was and how much of a struggle it was for me to take on that fucking class. Anyway, it was enough that I was aware of her, as in, like, I knew she was probably in my dance class, because she was waiting outside the room, texting. And then I opened the door, and I held it open for her. She was kind of like, oh, you held the door open for me. And that kind of like reaction. And then she walked in and she said, thank you. And I said, you're welcome. And I was like, I'm in love. It just hit me like a bolt of lightning. It was very, very frightening. It was just, bam, I'm in love. And so I talked to a couple people about it, and to be honest, I didn't think she was, like, wildly attractive. Like, she was attractive, but it wasn't like she was one of those drop-dead gorgeous models that walk into a room and it's like, oh my god, she's just, it's amazingly, like, stunning. The type of person who walks into the room and everyone turns their head. She wasn't like that. And a lot of people kept being like, oh, it's lust. And I was like, but that was the thing. It was like, sure, maybe I want to hook up with her, but I actually, like, wanted good things for her, and I wanted her to be happy. Like, it wasn't like, oh, that's a hot girl and I want to fuck her, so I'm in lust. It was really, I just want something for her, you know, like happiness and good things. And as much as I would love to be a part of that, I just want her to have those things. Now, mind you, I didn't speak to her for like 7 weeks. I eventually spoke to her at the end of the quarter at some point. I just would not talk to her because I was like, she's probably straight. There's no point. And of course, my friends kept being like, you should talk to her. And like in dance class, she was actually a dance major. And so my friend was like, you could ask her for help, like just go talk to her, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, you know, I just, no. And I think part of that might have also stemmed. I didn't realize I was in an emotionally abusive relationship. That was my first one. So I just was like afraid of dating and wasn't taking any chances. But I was just like so in love. I was like, I'm fine. A lot of time passed, and finally, I made up an excuse to walk in the same direction as her. And we started, you know, talking. And at this point, like, one of my friends who I was talking to about this, he was convinced it was love, which I feel like most of my female friends were like, convinced it was lust. I feel like most of my female friends were like, it's lust, it's lust, it's lust. My guy friends were like, you should go for it, go talk to her. And I kind of weirdly built this narrative about her in my head because she didn't really know anyone. So I figured, you know, she was a junior transfer and she was an alpha phi. Now, for those of you that don't know Greek, like alpha phi is like the hot sorority. And my friend who was like, it's just lust, nah, nah, nah. She was in a different sorority and was like, she's probably a bitch and da, da, da. Because that's like what alpha phi is, nah, nah, nah. And I was like, okay, that's good. That's good that she probably doesn't have a good personality because I'm in love with her, but I don't know her personality. She's just quiet. And then I, you know, went out on my way to talk to her, and she was like really nice, like funny, cute, that kind of jazz. And I was like, motherfucker. And then we kind of started a little bit of a rapport. Now, this was all through the end of fall quarter. And then, you know, we went on Christmas break, and then we came back, and I was still in love with this girl. I didn't have any classes with her, but I would see her on my way to my class, my fucking 8 a.m. ballet 2 dance class. Why I did that to myself, it's masochistic. And she'd always be on her way to class, I guess. And I did think it was odd she was coming from the direction of, like, the freshman dorms, but I was like, okay, maybe she's an RA, or, you know, she's just parking over there. It doesn't really make sense. But then I actually looked her up on Facebook, because that's something I don't do. I don't look into, like, girls I'm into, even if I'm, like, actually dating them and, you know, having a conversation with them. I don't do it. And I went on her Facebook, and I was like, she graduated high school last year. What the fuck? So I was in my last year of college, and I was like, oh, she doesn't know anyone, and she keeps coming from the freshman dorms because she's a freshman. I was like, holy fucking shit. So young. I mean, like, she was just 17. Like, it would have been illegal, like, a few months ago. And so I was like, okay, it's fine. Like, probably nothing's gonna happen. And then, like, I actually started spending more time with her because I was observing shows that were, like, dance shows for lighting, and I was lighting a lot of dance shows, and she was just kind of in my world, like, a lot. And we talk and blah, 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 and it was fine, it was all good, and I'd even go out of my way to be late for my film class so I could, like, pass her by. And of course I had friends in that class, and they would, like, never let me be late because, of course, I couldn't tell them why. And one day, we're walking across the bridge, and we'd always say hi to each other, which is, like, a huge win, considering, you know, I wasn't even, you know, on conversation terms with her, and I was in love with her. And one day, I waved hi, and she I don't want to say she ignored me. Who knows what she was going through on that day. She had sunglasses on me. She just didn't see me. But as quickly as I fell in love with her, I fell out of love with her. And it was wild. It was literally like 3 months of my life. And it was the strangest, craziest experience I have truly ever had, was love at first sight. There is science in for and against it. And I think the problem is that when it comes to dissecting love at first sight and whether it exists or not, people don't have proper definitions of what love is. It changes. Because I was trying to find, because I researched love at first sight a while ago. I think I was going to do a YouTube video on it. I'm eventually going to get active again on It's Yasmin. I read about two different kinds of loves, and there's actually a name for it. But basically, it's the idea of falling in love and then staying in love. And oh, now I remember what they're called. Duh, sustainable and unsustainable love. Fucking A. It's too late. I'm already recording. I'm not going to look it up now. There's a lot of articles. You know, they talk about it's easy to fall in love. It is. It's literally when you're experiencing love-like feelings, your brain is lighting up the same way a mind lights up when it's on heroin. It's addictive and it feels really good. So it's easy to fall in love, but it's not easy to sustain it and to keep love going. A lot of people described it in a couple articles as it's a choice. It's a choice to stay in love, because being in love takes commitment and it takes being able to make compromises. You know, that's why they say love, that's, you know, when people are in a relationship where they like never fight and never argue and stuff like that, it can only last up to 5 years because you're not doing the things that love requires to be sustained, as making difficult choices, not being selfish, you know, that kind of stuff. There's actual science. So neuropsychotherapist Dr. Trisha Stratford, oh goodness, did research in her PhD work that actually supports love at first sight. So first, you have the chemical reaction I was mentioning. It's from this article from Huffington Post called We Talk to a Neuroscientist About Love at First Sight. And that's where I got the whole, it lights up your brain like heroin. Next, there's this idea of the gaze. So it's kind of like if you love someone or you have unrequited like attraction to them, if they don't return the look back and make eye contact with you, it's kind of like they're not interested and it's easier to move by. But if someone locks eyes with you, it reaffirms your attraction to them is reciprocated, whether it's not actually reciprocated, because interestingly, just the cases of unrequited love, which I'll get into later. So it's interesting, but we'll talk about it later. Now, what happens scientifically when you lock eyes with someone, your adapted oscillators, which are part of the prefrontal cortex, which is the orbital frontal complex, these lock between you and the person and it starts to form a loop. So the greater the feeling there, the greater, you know, the feelings grow and it's circulated. So if you feel love at first sight and you meet them, those oscillators, Jesus Christ, are triggered. Like I was saying, if there isn't like an attachment back or a gaze back, that loop isn't triggered. But I think a lot of love at first sight people does include this locking of the eyes, even if one person has no idea what the fuck is going on. There's also an element of smell too. Now, unfortunately, a lot of the research I find and read is like very heteronormative man, woman. But to me, I feel like it's not necessarily has to do with your sexual orientation. Also, I substitute masculine and feminine for male and female because I don't think enough research has been done. Because there is research showing through MRI and CAT scans and whatever that, like, for example, a lesbian's mind is actually wired similarly to a straight man's mind. And there's same with gay men and straight women. So there actual is like a gay mapping of the mind. But they say that when you smell somebody and someone smells good, like their natural like stink, you're actually smelling their immune system. Sort of similar to kissing. When you kiss, you're checking to see if they have antibodies that you lack so you can make like a good offspring. But you can smell the person, and women apparently can smell up to 10 feet away. I also feel like this just reaffirms my non-binary identity because I have a terrible sense of smell. But I can see that being the same really for anybody because there's pheromones. If you think about what's happening, it's a lot, right? Your brain is lighting up. There's all these different parts of like your fucking brain that like are lighting up. It's like heroin's being injected. You make eye contact, so it's looping through that word I can't say, making it stronger. And then you smell the person, you're like, yes, we can make great babies. All that's happening within a matter of seconds. All of that is an indicator of being in love, right? And falling in love. Because remember, falling in love is really easy and it feels good and people do it all the time. But it's a question of whether you can sustain that love. Now, is love at first sight sustainable? So it's like insane. They did this study and something like in the 80 or 90 percentile of people who have felt love at first sight, they attribute to bias memory. So that means that they're actually with their partner and they believe that the two of them had a love at first sight experience. So people think because it worked out and it did get together that they're making up the moment that they first met. A lot of people are like, I knew they were the one in the moment. So rather than accepting that as something that's possible, because a lot of people did know, like there's a lot of successful marriages where people are like, the minute I met them, I knew they were the one. So rather than thinking that's possible, people are imposing a biased memory, saying that they're just making it up or their past and what they remember is colored by the fact that they're in love and in a relationship. But on the flip side, studies show that couples that claim that they had a love at first sight connection actually have more passionate and stronger connections. So, it's almost like a chicken and the egg situation with that, because if them having a love at first sight memory actually is correlated to having a stronger, more intense relationship, then maybe they did. And then you have like 8% that the love at first sight was unrequited, like mine. Another researcher, Stephanie Cacioppo. Yeah, I stand by that. She's sort of on the side of love at first sight isn't real. But something I find very, very interesting is that she doesn't believe, seem to like support, her research doesn't seem to support love at first sight exists, except I think there's something she came up with that does support love at first sight. Now, obviously, I'm very biased because I feel like I've experienced it. She says there are four dimensions of love: chemistry, cognition, preference / rewarding mechanisms, and an intention to be with a significant other. So those, the first three character, the dimensions of love is cited from a study by Hatfield and McCoy. No, I'm kidding. Hatfield and Rapson in 1987. Or, never mind, they got the goal-oriented part from that, because passionate love is a state of intense longing for a union with another person. And again, both her and them or somebody, the article is by Byrdi, B-Y-R-D-I, I don't know how to spell that, say that, Jesus. Basically, again, they're saying that there are two stages of falling in love. There's falling in love and then sustaining it. So the first part is subconscious, falling in love and staying in love, and cultivating that love is a conscious choice of actually making it grow. The part I find really interesting is that desire, which I believe is from a study by Rosemary Basson, who's an MD psychiatrist, desire is the first three dimensions of love: chemistry, cognition, and preference / rewarding mechanisms. That's desire, that is lust. Love adds the intention to be with a significant other. A lot of shit lights up in your brain when desire and shit happens when you see somebody, and it has to do with the rewarding part of your brain. Again, kind of let's go back to the heroin mind. But what's interesting is that different parts of your mind light up when you're in love and when you have desire and lust. So they're actually two different things. And one is very concrete: desire, lust, erotica, get it. The other one, love, is actually really abstract because of the way the brain lights up in different ways with your amygdala and hippocampus and other things that honestly I don't think it makes a goddamn difference if I say. There actually is a difference, right? Because think of the difference in feeling. When you are in desire or lust, you know, you feel, I guess, horny, you have different tensions, there's a different kind of primal instinct happening. But when you're in love, you get giddy, you get butterflies, right? So they're two distinct things. And love comes with that second one, with the intention to be with a significant other. Now, this particular article, This Is Your Brain on Love According to Science, kind of doesn't leave room for polyamory, which is interesting, because one of the ways to describe the difference between desire and love is desire is like a longing for anyone, I guess, and like love is a desire for just that person. So I guess from a polyamorous viewpoint, you can extend the definition to just those people. Here's the thing that I think is interesting. This article is kind of basically being love can't be at first sight because it takes nurturing and time and all this other shit. But love, unlike desire, has an intention to be with someone and comes with giddy feelings and all this stuff. My love at first sight experience is characterized by the giddy feelings, the butterflies, with an intention to be with that significant other. It very distinctly did not feel like lust. I felt desire before. I know I've said I identify as a demisexual, but it doesn't mean I can't get turned on ever, right? So defining those two separate things kind of supports my experience. If desire is only XYZ, but I felt ABC, then it must have not just been like lust. And that also ties back into what is love? It's baby, don't hurt me. Don't hurt me no more. But what is love? To most people who I think don't believe in love at first sight, have a very narrow, specific view of what love is. And that is the sustainable kind. It is you spent time to get to know someone and you're going to commit to them and it's going to build. However, there is a lot of distinct scientific evidence that shows that there is another type of love. The kind of love that's not sustainable. The kind of love that won't last. Now, again, the bias memory thing is like, okay, chicken or the egg, which came first? The love at first sight or the memory of the love at first sight, right? So maybe it can be sustainable if they make the choice to make it grow. Now, one of the things that's really interesting about falling in love and love at first sight is like 17,000 things. For example, the reason why I brought up in my story that it seems like guys in my class were falling in love at first sight and maybe I am because I'm more masculine was because men tend to report it more. And it's kind of like that old stupid saying of like, girls learn to be attracted to who they fall in love with and guys learn to fall in love with who they're attracted to. I'm not saying that's true or not, but and I'm also not saying guys in the sense of males, but masculine halves and girls in the sense of females, but feminine halves. Maybe there's some truth to that. Maybe people who are more inclined to visually, that's the first thing that pops out to them. They're more likely to fall in love at first sight. Love at first sight is 9 times more likely to happen if someone is just 1 point more attractive on the attractive scale. I have no idea. I've never heard of this before, but apparently you can boil down attractiveness to points. And 1 point has to do with like a 9% increase. So there's an element of that where, man, they could be really, really attractive. And that's why you fell in love with them. And the thing is I do think there's an element of that. But it doesn't mean that they're not in love. It couldn't mean that they're not in love with that person, though. So something I think, especially when you don't talk to who you fall in love with at first sight, is you get to paint their entire story. You get to fill in every blank. And the less you know about someone, the more blanks you get to fill in. My teacher's love at first sight experience, one of them, was he was like in Europe or somewhere random and a lady drove up next to them in the car and they locked eyes and he fell in love and that was it. A lot happened there, right? Like all in one thing. Or he actually might have been on a motorcycle next to her because I'm also thinking about how like spatially like he couldn't necessarily smell her or this or that. But they locked eyes, all that shit happened, right? And he specifically said they locked eyes. That woman is a fantasy. It doesn't matter how real life she existed, he will never know anything about her, ever. She's the mysterious woman in Europe he fell in love with at first sight, and that's it. And the thing is he could be in love with that. There's no reason why he can't be in love. Maybe not with her, but the idea of her. And the thing is we're all victims of that constantly. I mean, I sometimes say how that was my last relationship, and I've seen it with people all the time. Like, dudes can be weird straight guys. Like, if they meet a girl who is hot and has similar interests in them, they think they're soulmates. That doesn't mean they are, but also doesn't invalidate the feelings they're having in any way. So there is an element of, yeah, you can be in love with what you know of that person. You just haven't taken the time to get to know them yet. It's asking, do you actually have to know someone to be in love with them? There are 7 types of romantic love. There's infatuation, which is passion. There's liking, which is intimacy. Empty love, which is commitment. Fatuous love, which is commitment and passion. Romantic love, which is passion, intimacy. Compassionate love, which is intimacy and commitment. And then there's consummate love, which is passion, intimacy, and commitment. So there's like a lot of different kinds of love. Fatuous love would probably be sort of like love at first sight, where it's commitment and passion. It doesn't mean you know the person. It's like, lately, wow, can we talk for a second about all the celebrities that are getting engaged within 2 minutes of meeting each other? Like, it's a lot, and it's actually, some of them aren't surprising, and a couple really are. That's fatuous love, but that doesn't mean it can't turn into something else. It can't become intimate. Because the problem, I think, is when these whirlwind romances and things move too quickly, is you're not getting to know if you can actually have sustainable love. Because there's this thing called a love map. Why it's called a love map, I don't know, because it's described as a checklist. So the love map is a checklist of things you need to fall in love with somebody. And they can be conscious or unconscious choices. For example, have you ever had 2 friends or had a friend of, you know, a compatible sex, gender, and sexual orientation that you just love and they're amazing and you probably could really rock it as like a couple, but you're just not in love? It's just not going to happen. They're your friend. It's because something isn't being checked off on your fucking love map. I think it's so, like, it's literally described as a checklist and it's called a love map. It makes no goddamn sense. Anyway. It could be something that's as deep as religion and politics, and something as superficial as the color of their hair. Interestingly, if you have a negative ending or a relationship with an ex, you actually can become attracted to the opposite of what they look like. For example, my first emotionally abusive ex was a blonde, blue-eyed girl. And I didn't even realize this was happening at first until someone else told me about it, but I was becoming more attracted progressively to darker complexion girls. Start off as like brunette girls, moving into like brown eyes, tans, Latinas. And like, I was pretty into like brown girls for a while. And lately I've been kind of just over it. I think I had a not great ending with a brown girl. And I was like, oh, people are just people. So it can be a really unconscious thing in an evolutionary way, because I'm like, ooh, a blonde girl hurt me. That means blondes hurt me. So I'm not going to date a blonde. That's sort of how and why we fall in love with people, is because they're not checking off something on our map. I'm always just stupid. I don't even know where I was going with this. Okay, yes. So I'm just so upset that a checklist is being referred to as a map. If you move too quickly with somebody and you're like engaged in less than a year and you lived with each other within a couple weeks, that kind of thing, you're not getting a chance to figure out if they actually fill out your love map. And you're also not sure if you're actually sustaining off sustainable love. Right now you're going off of passion and whirlwind romance and you're falling in love. And I think the honeymoon phase lasts anywhere from 6 to 18 months. And the honeymoon phase is amazing, and I suggest you really take your time with it. But you might all of a sudden end up in a point where you're like married, because you got married within 3 minutes of meeting each other, and you realize that they don't check off all your, you know, requirements on your checklist. Another thing too is that your checklist, aka your map, fucking changes over time. So things that used to be important aren't important. You go through life experiences and your map is always being redrawn so you can check it off later. So gay married young, I think, can be a problem just besides the fact you may not know how to be an emotional older adult, but it takes a lot of maturity to work through change and differences, and you might wake up one day and your life just changed and what you want changed. So is love at first sight always sustainable? Maybe, maybe not. No really first love, or not in the sense of the first time falling in love ever in your life, but when you first develop love with someone, you need to work on it. That seems to be the general consensus. And I think that's why people associate all love with having to have, you need to know someone for an X amount of time before it's socially acceptable to fall in love with them. And then you have to be with them for another X amount of time before you know you can live with them and blah, 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 blah. The thing with love at first sight is that you might fall in love with someone within the first second of meeting them or within the first 2 months. Even that is socially unacceptable, really, if you're like, yeah, I'm in love with them. They're like, you met them a month ago. It's almost like you can't tell anybody or tell them until you've been together for a year. Then it does become a cute, sweet memory. But if you tell someone after a month of dating, I'm in love with you, they're going to be like, okay, bye. Because we do have this stigma about how fast you can fall in love with somebody. And since I brought up just like a bunch of random shit, another thing that could be an attribute to love at first sight is the halo effect. So the halo effect usually happens around attractive people, but I do think it can be taken to a level of vibes. Interestingly, for some reason, I don't see this coming up as much. A lot of people are always like, oh, you like them immediately just because, you know, they're attractive. And maybe it's an LA thing that we talk about vibes a lot. But people have a really hard time with dating apps. If you listen to my interviews, you can tell it's a recurring theme that I'm going to have them stop talking about. Because you can't get someone's energy. You know what I mean? So if you believe in vibes and energy, that you can meet someone and like know if you could be friends with them, then dismissing love at first sight is a little extreme. Science says that you can know if you're compatible with dating someone within 3 minutes of meeting them. That's like before the drinks even fucking show up. That's before you can even get into the bar, okay? Other people say it's 7 minutes. But it's somewhere around that time. Anyway, it's a very, very short amount of time to determine whether you would want to spend the rest of your life with someone, or at least give it a shot. So there's this concept of the halo effect. So in 1920, psychologist Edward Thorndike, coined the phrase the halo effect, which grew to mean like an overall impression of one's life. But it's only like through a positive lens. You know, you think of a halo, you think of angels, like in old paintings, people have like a halo around them to signify that, you know, there's usually an extreme positive religious thing, like they're angels. Now, this is like kind of random. But there's this dude, Edward Bernays, who's known as the father of spin in public relations, which I'm really only bringing him up because, like, I'm just imagining this dude, probably with a monocle and a long beard, and he is the founder of a spin class. He came up with riding a bicycle in a room and going nowhere. It's like the hamster wheel of humans. He kind of used it to replace the word propaganda. Or something. I'm just throwing him out there. He seems important. The father of spin is fucking hilarious. But the halo effect, which the author of this article is referring to as blinding charisma, her name is Sarah K. Smullins. Oh, okay. So she's a family therapist and educator. She gets to make up words. I thought she was just a random, you know, writing an article on like fucking Huffington Post. You don't get to come up with terms. But basically, blinding charisma, or the halo effect, is you get this overall impression of someone and they just seem amazing. So what happens is you actually start filling in the blanks. So you're like, gosh, this person's so wonderful. They must also be honest. They must also be generous. Blah, 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 blah. And so you're just filling in all these blanks with something that's really positive, and you have this overall blinding effect on somebody. Now, she brings up in this idea of this blinding charisma, and the problem with charisma is there's con artists, It's, you know, it's a really taking off in the Midwest, particularly in the Kansas region. I believe they have a showing soon in Arkansas of the different multitudes of art that you can make with corn. That's also porn. Corn porn. I'm sure you can look it up, and I really don't want to know what you find. Anyway, con artists and just people who are toxic people, you wake up and you're like, how the hell did they get into my life? How this happened is because they had such intense charisma or this halo effect on you. So if you lump that in to love at first sight, I think you can take that to mean someone's vibe and energy. You can meet someone, you're like, wow, we really click. They seem cool. And then you kind of just start assuming good things about them. You're like, no, they're probably good. You tell your friends about them, like, yeah, I'm sure they like support baby seals. And then it kind of builds, and you're not really giving them necessarily a chance to prove themselves. If you completely just combine everything I brought up, the heroin brain, the eye-locking gaze that intensifies everything, being able to smell the pheromones, being able to pick up on someone's vibe and energy, and filling in the blanks, there's really no reason why you can't experience love at first sight, especially when the definition of love does not require intimacy. It doesn't. Now, one may argue it's not healthy love or sustainable love, but it doesn't make it not love. And, you know, there is a chance that people have experienced love at first sight truly, and then pursued it and it worked out, and people are just calling it a biased memory rather than looking at the fact that maybe we need to broaden our understanding and our definition of love. Because to be honest, love's always changing. The definition, I mean, marriage had nothing to do with love until very recently. It was all contractual. Now, this idea of if you're in a romantic comedy love triangle, maybe you don't have to choose. Maybe you can be polyamorous. Our definition and understanding of love is always changing, and it's growing as we understand things more as a society, but also because we're just more open to accepting things. And maybe love at first sight is one of those things. Maybe you'll never experience it, but just because you don't ever experience it doesn't mean it's not real. That's like being like, well, I'm not gay, so there must not be any such thing as gay people. You don't have to understand something to get it. Anyway, maybe this was just a long propaganda episode to promote love at first sight. But as I said throughout the episode as well, that rushing, there's no reason to rush. If you're in love, love is patient, right? So y'all can calm the fuck down. You don't have to get married quickly. You don't have to rush into anything quickly, because love at first sight doesn't mean it's sustainable. And you have to make the active choice to sustain love. And if you take that on, maybe you can check all the fucking requirements off your love map. Thanks for listening. Again, don't forget to follow love, like, love it, just love it. But, you know, share and subscribe and do all that jazz. And if you're dating out there, good luck, because it's a ghost town.